It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of American Loser. I am your host, KP Burke. With me, as always, my handsome delf of a father. Larry Burke is here. How are you,
sir? We got to find a different intro than that. But yeah, we're here. Thank you much. But it's all good.
I have had people ask me what a DILF is. And I said, if you don't know, then you don't know.
That's right. But leave it there.
But also behind the ones and twos here, because we are at a shared universe studio. Mike and Ming taking great care of us as always. And behind the soundboards is the only guy we want doing this. Our big kahuna is back in the building. How are you, bud?
Good, there, man. How is. Are you? I've missed you since the whole hour it's been since we recorded the last episode.
With the holiday schedule's getting a little weird here for us. And also, speaking of holidays, the last holiday we all celebrated together as a team, guys, was Halloween. And we talked about the possession of Elizabeth Knapp. Who was in the building for us on that one? That is joining us here again. One of my favorite comedians, one of my favorite people, Miss Jackie Byrne in the building.
Hi, everybody. Hey. Thanks for having me back. I'm very excited.
Of course, nice. You were very, very, you were one of our most popular guests. And then a lot of men in Turkey wanted to know how much money they could purchase.
How much for the women?
I am so flattered. Thank you.
And you're not a crazy person, okay?
That we know of.
Yeah. But I mean, let's keep that on the DL.
You're one of the nicest people I know, Jackie.
Well, thank
and
you.
One of the things that I love about you, though, is I love you are so nice that when you throw a little shade, it.
What do you mean?
It stings hard.
And I
your
don't
judgments,
your way.
Your judgments of Miss Elizabeth Knapp were very funny to me, and we enjoyed that. It was
thanks.
One of our better episodes. So this week, we're going to talk about another crazy bitch, all right?
That's what I'm here for. I'm here to talk about the crazy bitches.
Well, this one's interesting. I know we told you guys what the topic is about here. I know Kahuna knows a little something about this one, so we're going to see if we can separate the myth from the reality on this a little bit here, Dad. But now, located at 525 South Winchester Boulevard in San Jose, California, there is a gorgeous sprawling mansion. The mansion is a Queen Anne-style Victorian home, but it is unlike anything most people have ever seen.
Nope.
The initial and continued construction of this house lasted from 1884 to 1922. Lawrence Patrick, you worked as a carpenter for a majority.
Yeah, that's a pretty long job. that's what we call milking it, but yeah, that's a good gig. That's a good gig.
That's talk about job security.
1884 to 1922. Got to get it right.
That's right. So post Civil War and then into essentially the Roaring Twenties, you could be working the entire time.
It doesn't even take that long to build skyscrapers. Like,
might as well have been a union job, right?
Exactly.
Now that construction ended in 1922.
That got me good.
It was a seven-story palace that contains some odd things like staircases that lead to nowhere, doors that open to nothing, secret vaults, windows that overlook other rooms in the house, and stairs with oddly sized risers, which I don't really think that's spooky. It's more of just like a,
a screw-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not
so
much.
A mistake here.
They said she was 4'10 and had like brittle bones and shit, so there's like
she couldn't lift her feet up.
They weren't real stairs, right? Like they were like a ramp for that sweet little.
But could you just imagine if you were an obsessive compulsive person and you noticed that one of the risers on your stair was oddly sized, just slightly off a little bit, so room, tear it down, start over.
Absolutely.
But there was many other different architectural types that were on display on both the interior and the exterior of this building. I got numbers for you, Jay Byrne. You're a homeowner now, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You don't have to say where you live because I don't want those Turkish people to find you. But this house, I'm going to assume if it was on Zillow, we would be looking at this and saying that this house at 525 South Winchester Boulevard in San Jose, California has 161 rooms, two ballrooms, 40 bedrooms, 10,000 panes of glass, 17 chimneys, two basements, and not one, two, but three elevators.
Beautiful.
All right. Not a bad thing right there.
No.
I wonder what the resale value on that would be, especially in a Bergen County market.
The Zillow estimate, yeah.
The house, like I was saying, it contains gold and silver chandeliers, ornate flooring, and meticulously intricate artwork, including several stained glass windows made personally by, you want to guess, Jack?
I have no idea.
The Tiffany Company.
Is that true?
Indeed.
Oh, I'm into
Tiffany
it.
Glass.
They made it specifically for the occupant of this mansion. Now, the mansion is decorated and designed and built to the specifications of its primary inhabitant, one of the wealthiest women in the world, with one of the most famous last names of all time. You guys know who we're talking about?
Well, spill it.
Winchester.
Winchester.
So Miss Sarah Winchester, this is her personal home, this mansion. She was the heiress to the Winchester fortune of Winchester Rifles. All right? So that's about when her husband passed away, she became the sole inhabitant of her half of the company, which was $20 million, which adjusted for inflation, is about $521 million.
Or a cool half billion dollars.
Yeah. No, she's a rich bitch.
She hit the lottery.
Could you imagine? I mean,
the Powerball and
yeah, that's all, not even all Kardashian all money. You know what money. I mean? Yeah. Like, she's the real deal.
You're right, man. I wish this was a union job.
Well, not for nothing, too. They said that her estimated daily allowance for spending was $1,000 a day.
Mm-hmm. Back then?
Back then.
Yeah, no, she killed it.
She could spend $1,000 a day back then, which I believe was, I mean, if you accelerate that for inflation, I can't even imagine what it is.
Yeah, that's like $1,000. That's probably more like $2,500.
She ain't eating pizza in between episodes of the podcast, right. I'll put it that way.
You know,
not too many ramen noodle dinners.
Definitely not.
They actually just... as recently as 2016, just found another room.
I read that too. Isn't that bananas?
Which is mind-blowing.
Yeah. That had, get this, a giant pump organ. So they had the Phantom of the Opera living up in there, just chilling in the Winchester mansion.
One of the vaults, actually, they thought was going to house some treasure in the house. It actually was, it contained... hair from her child.
Yeah, that was sad. Poor thing.
But she's a wacky character. We got to unpack who she is here real quick. The mansion is the personal home of Miss Sarah Lockwood Winchester, the heiress to the Winchester fortune. Dad, what is a Winchester, and why is it worth all that damn money?
Winchester is most people think of the Winchester as being a rifle. It was a repeating firearm, which is... went on to become known as the gun that won the West type of a thing. It was a rifle and a game changer as far as firearm production was concerned. That it became immensely popular, often pictured in a lot of the old West things. It was believed that in one of our previous episodes with General George Armstrong Custer that he didn't have Winchesters, but the Native Americans did. So it was definitely a game changer in firearms.
This is like the iPhone of its time, essentially, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say even above and beyond
If you could use your iPhone to kill somebody, you'd at least try, right? I mean, there's got to be an app for that, I believe.
Yeah, somebody's looking for that.
Well, like you said, this is the famous Winchester rifle that won the West. It is world-renowned and highly regarded. The rifle is made by the Winchester Repeating Arms Company out of New Haven, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The company is founded in 1886, 152 years ago, by Oliver Winchester, a clothing manufacturer. Jackie Byrne, what is the store that your husband does not allow you to take the credit card into, clothing-wise?
Oh, he doesn't. He can't control me.
Well, were you like an Abercrombie and Fitch kind of a girl, or?
I think there was a time. Well, you know, Summer Girls. You know how I feel about that song. So yeah, when LFO came out with that song, we all had Abercrombie and Fitch. But no, I'm a Nordstrom girl right now.
Nordstrom girl.
Nordstrom. Yeah. Well, that's pretty high end.
Now imagine if Nordstrom all of a sudden started manufacturing weapons. That's essentially the jump that Mr. Winchester is making from being a clothing manufacturer in New York City to now being a venture capitalist who dips a lot of his money into literally selling guns.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, he was pretty much a shirt manufacturer. There was, you know, wasn't a whole line of stuff, but he was in New York City making shirts.
Just imagine you open up the L.L. Bean catalog and it's Uggs and then a couple of pajama pants and then a repeating rifle with a breech load.
There you go.
That's natural.
That's a natural progression.
Do we know why he made the switch to making?
Yeah, to make money.
He was Very true.
Rather than make shirts, let's make some money.
It's dead on there, actually. It's the
nailed it.
Now,
right
the true start of the Winchester legacy, because that is a great question, Jack. The Winchester legacy goes back to Norwich, Connecticut, and pay attention for some famous names to get dropped in here. Norwich, Connecticut. There's a partnership between two fellas. We're talking about the gun business, right?
Yeah, two gunsmiths.
Two fellas by the name of Horace Smith and Daniel Wesson. Smith and Wesson.
Yeah, that Smith and Wesson.
Yep, it's the Smith and Wesson that Clint Eastwood would later use to clean up the crime-ridden streets of San Francisco. But these two guys, they have a partnership that they formed because they're two quality gunsmiths, engineers, I mean, brilliant guys for the time. They would go on to start two companies. One of them later becoming the famous Smith & Wesson brand that we kind of still associate with Dirty Harry and Kickin' Ass and all that other stuff. The other became what was known as the Volcanic Repeating Arms Company. The two partners were able to get access to a patent for a repeating lever-action rifle that Smith was able to make several improvements on. The original design for this rifle, because the idea of – I'm going to throw to you here in a second, LP. But the idea of a repeating rifle was very valuable at the time because before that, we were doing like muskets and shit like that.
Single shot.
So single shot, and then you got to stop, reload. I mean, it's very, you know, this is the first time that you could just go, ch-ch-ch. All of a sudden you got another round. We're back. They would say that a good militiaman in the American Revolution, I believe, could fire off, I want to say it was 3 shots in a minute. What's the time frame for that? 3 shots in a minute. Now, this guy, you can empty, you know, probably 300 in a minute if you had infinite ammo and the barrel didn't overheat. So. Why is this repeating arms thing, why is the lever action thing desirable enough that Smith & Wesson are going to acquire a failed patent because they think they're the guys that can make it work?
Yeah, you know, they went in two different directions. I mean, Smith & Wesson, they really kind of split the company that they were going to go with the volcanic rifle, and then Smith & Wesson were going to continue to target more the well, I didn't mean to target. That's a bad one.
Pun intended.
But, yeah, pun intended. But they're going to stay more with the revolver kind of a thing, and they went on to become really, really good at revolvers. But the rifle had some problems. Now, these were not the first attempts at making multi-shot rifles, as you said, Kev. That you know, a single shot musket. Yeah, a really good guy could probably get off 3 shots in a minute. But they were not.
I always fuck up the order on that stuff. Like you'd get complacent, you know, that you got to put the ball, then the powder, then the, you know, the paper.
And yeah.
Too much work.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're dealing with the, you have to take the gun down off your shoulder, put it on, put the butt to the ground, you know, clean the thing out, drop the powder in there, drop the ball, the patch, all that stuff. Put a little bit, either a percussion cap or a flintlock musket into the firing
involved.
Pan. It's
yeah,
really many, 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 many steps. But actually, the first lever action rifle was not by Smith & Wesson. That happened years earlier. There was probably the first lever action rifle that we could really point to was developed by a guy by the name of Colt. He had a Colt first and second model Colt, which was a ring lever rifle. So rather than bringing the lever forward, there was a little ring in front of that you would pull on this ring, which would eject the cartridge and bring a new cartridge up into the gun.
If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it.
Yeah, you should have put a ring on it. Absolutely.
Well done.
Now, Mr. Colt, he's a little malt beverage guy?
Yeah, this
is Colt malt liquor? No.
I met him in college.
Did you? Yeah. Had a few run-ins with him, did you?
Perhaps.
Okay, perhaps. All right. A little shout out to New Jersey here, though, because the Colt ring lever action rifle was actually produced in our own Paterson, New Jersey.
Oh, what a shock.
By the Patton Arms Manufacturing. Yeah, and then, you know, better ways of killing people still continue. But
you know anybody who was born in Paterson, Lawrence Patrick?
Well, we really try to hide that fact, but yeah, there was a guy that came out of Paterson, New Jersey, by the name of K.P. Burke, but that was a special delivery.
St. Joe's Hospital.
So. There you go.
Gangsta.
That's right.
So now they've got that is my street cred.
We was stayed. That your screen name back in the day? Gangsta KP 201?
P-Town.
It was P-Town. KP in the zip code of Paterson.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. So now
one of the difficulties though with that first cult, that was a cap and a ball type thing. So it was just a slight modification from the old single shot muzzleloader kind of a thing, because you were still dealing with a lot of multiple steps, and a paper cartridge was easily jammed. They had some difficulties with it, but
so it's not necessarily the design of the rifle. Sometimes it's the cartridge going in it.
Absolutely.
So it's like you can have a great car, but if you got shitty gas in it,
right?
You know, there you not go. Do much for you,
right?
So they've got this Volcanic Repeating Arms Company here, and stop me when you got other stuff to jump in with, because right. I know we did some fun research on this one.
Oh yeah,
it's very weird too, because in the research for American Loser, you know, we're pretty much searching all sorts of stuff that if Google was to see it, we should probably put on an FBI watch list.
Right.
Guys are searching out guns.
Not to say that we aren't already, but
yeah. It's
now, is this one of those episodes of American Losers where it's the object of the rifle we're trying to prove is the loser, or is this a person?
Man, oh, stand buddy. By.
Oh,
stand by.
Kahuna.
So many different alleys
Buckle
we're about
up,
to go
baby.
Down.
Oh, man.
Like we said, the Volcanic Repeating Arms Company now, the two partners are able to make these improvements onto the rifle. But in order to manufacture their new designs on this rifle and their patented volcanic lever action, which is literally, like we said, just a ch-ch, and now you got another round in the chamber, that whole 90-second process of having to take the musket out and all that, replaced by literally just going ch-ch. So now in 1885, they formed the Volcanic Repeating Arms Company.
Yeah, we're still with Smith & Wesson here at this point.
Yes.
Right.
And the largest stockholder in this first Smith & Wesson company is the clothing manufacturer from New York City, the aforementioned Oliver Winchester. All right? Now, Winchester, like we said, is a venture capitalist, which means that he takes over failing companies. And I believe that he believed in this product. And he took it on. And you could tell it was a passion project for him, because he wasn't making good money on it at first. But he stayed through with it. And the repeating rifle, the problem they were having, why they were getting so little returns on people buying it, was because the rifle was prone to malfunction, making it far less reliable than the muskets and pistols that were used during that day. A lot of them didn't like to like the people in the military, they didn't want to get on board with that, because this new technology, oh, what happens if it doesn't work, you know? Like, do you remember when Bluetooth happened? Everybody was like, this is the most annoying thing ever. No one's ever going to use this. Well, oh, you must be really important because you have a headset on your cell phone. Oh, so important. And then now everybody has Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Now, my father just bought a brand new pickup truck. Literally, they have just designed things like, hey, all right, so your phone can tell you that someone's trying to call you. Your computer can tell you someone's trying to call you. Your TV can tell you who's calling you.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find a way to get your F-150 to tell you that fucking some douchebag's trying to get a hold of you in a group chat.
And can't you answer it like by voice too now, yep. I think? It's like something ridiculous.
Answer call. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you answer call, text back, whatever.
Unbelievable. But the thing is, you make improvements onto these things slowly but surely, right?
So right.
Now, Winchester had inherited during his takeover of the company another famous name here that some people will have heard of.
Well, I don't know if you want to say inherited, but part of the package
yeah.
was some of the employees that were there. He didn't really inherit this guy, but
one of the back in those times, I think you could inherit people.
Right.
Well, this gentleman was a brilliant gunsmith and engineer by the name of Benjamin Tyler Henry. Henry Rifles, if anybody knows what they're talking about with that stuff. Henry was able to make changes to the design and to the cartridges, more specifically the cartridges, for that repeating rifle, making his model the first ever reliable repeating rifle, quote, the Henry rifle.
Right. And Benjamin Henry, he was a brilliant guy, and it was by his improvements on the cartridge, on the bullet, if you will, that really set this whole thing apart with the Henry rifle, that now you had a reliable way of bringing the next cartridge into the chamber and to eject the old cartridge. So some of the difficulties that they had with the Volcanic rifle are now overcome by changing the cartridge rather than going with what they were using in the old Volcanic action.
Now, normally, I would, because, you know, there'd be people that only like gun fanatics would be familiar with a lot of the stuff we're talking about here, but there's an entire new generation that is obsessed with this stuff because of Red Dead Redemption. So that's the cowboy game on Xbox and PS3.
Oh.
I played the first one, Red Dead Redemption. I loved it. Red Dead 2 came out. But
it's
when you advance, see, Kahuna's he's our fucking millennial, see?
We got him on board.
Getting to learn about history and shit.
Leave me alone, okay? Like, it's a dope game.
It is a great, it's a great game. But my favorite thing about it is that the more money you get in that game, the nicer guns you're able to buy. So, and one of the guns, the first upgrades that you get in the first one is you do get a volcanic pistol, which is the lever action kind of pistol thing.
Okay, really right, cool. Right.
So. To be fair, that's accurate to life. You get more money, you get better stuff.
Oh, yeah. But it, I do like the hierarchy that they rank the guns on here with that. I didn't mean to interrupt, JLP. Get back to it.
No, it was just that's pretty much it. Henry was able to develop this new cartridge, and then he releases, like, in 1860, this new rifle that is now being manufactured or renamed by Winchester Repeating Arms Company.
So they changed the name of the company. It's not Smith & Wesson anymore, and then it goes to Volcanic.
Right.
Now it's the Winchester Company.
Because Ollie Winchester, you know, bought them out, bought out that part of Smith & Wesson mm-hmm. out that, all right, I'll take on the repeating rifle aspect of it. You guys can go on your way with your revolvers, and I'm going to take the rifle aspect on your way. And then Benjamin Henry was part of the rifle. Actually, he was plant manager for the rifle production, and he upped the cartridge to a .44 caliber, where the old Volcanic rifle was of a lesser caliber. So
now, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but a .44 caliber, that'd blow your head clean off.
Yeah. Now, did I fire 7 or did I fire 6? All right.
But he went ahead and made that change and everything. But it's important now because Winchester is now – it's kind of cool for me because if you're into guns at all or hunting or shooting – like I grew up shooting with you and my Uncle Paul and everything and the Scouts. And so Smith & Wesson, Browning, Henry, Colt, Winchester. These are all brand names. But they're also people that were probably at one time or another in a room together. That's kind of a crazy thing to think about. But – little Game of Thrones action there you didn't even know about. But in 1866, the first Winchester rifle, the model 1866.
Very creative. Winky dink right there.
Well, the gun had a nickname. This famous rifle had a nickname. Now, Jackie Byrne, what is it? What constitutes a cute nickname for something?
Oh, I don't know. Something that's like fun, short, usually.
Like, say you were going to nickname a boat. That somebody was going to buy.
Jackie-O.
Yes, that's Big Kahuna.
Don't give away my clothes.
I won't give it away. Jackie's got one of my favorite jokes on the topic there for a good nickname for a boat or how to name a ship,
My name is a nickname. I go by Jackie, but I'm Jacqueline.
That's true.
It's got to be fun. It's got to be snappy.
Well, it's this one's pretty snappy. Then you tell me, grade me on a thumbs up, thumbs down scale.
Let's
here.
Do it.
The model 1866, that rifle was nicknamed Yellow Boy.
I'm into it.
You're into it?
Yeah, why not?
Not bad.
Why the nickname?
I know, that's my next question.
There was some more brass and stuff on the thing that had kind of a yellowish glow to the thing. So
It's almost a copper nonsense to it.
Oh, okay.
But
I said brass, yeah, copper, that kind of thing, whatever. Yeah.
No, brass was made that the gun was very diverse in how it could be made, which attracted more people. So it's almost like you can have the world's best razor for shaving your face. But if you have one with a Batman logo on it, it's going to sell even more.
There you go.
The first bling is what I'm hearing, right? Seriously.
You were judged by what kind of a gun you had. That was a thing, man.
Really?
Yeah. It's a
pack and heat. That's where it starts. See? You're welcome, everybody.
The old Henry back in 1860 with the Henry rifle, that gained some notoriety too because, you know, 1860, now we're leading into the American Civil War. Mm-hmm. So that you know, if I could take a weapon that's going to fire 15 or 16 rounds into battle versus my single shot, you know, muzzle loading rifle, what would you rather have? I mean, sure. But it was expensive. And the Army never really purchased a whole lot of those, but there were a number of units that purchased the Henry rifles on their own. As a matter of fact, there was a quote from one of the Confederates that went up against a Yankee unit, a Union unit. That's easy for me to say, a Union unit that was armed with these old Henrys. That damn Yankee rifle that can be loaded on Sunday and fired all week. So, you know, they had to stop to reload. You can just keep firing.
Especially
it was attributed that one guy with a Henry repeating rifle, it would be equal to like 15 regular infantrymen with a single shot rifle. So, you know, your firepower is greatly multiplied.
Oh, it's through the roof. I mean, and this was revolutionary for the time, too, because like we said, in the Civil War, they are still marching around with these are kids that probably grew up shooting their father's Brown Bess, the famous English musket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are squirrel hunting kids going after. You got to make the one shot count. Otherwise, you're going hungry that night. Now, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, well, you got 18 or 19 shots now. Right. So. But it was very interesting here. The Civil War did see some usage, like you were saying, but it was largely mocked as a new technology, that there was a stigma that it wasn't going to be as reliable as the old muskets.
The 90-second reload muskets?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
But right. Winchester, oddly, so it wasn't a huge – they were popular, but they became very popular with civilians who were buying them because the guns were less clunky, provided more ammunition, were easy to use, and aided in home protection and asset protection. Mm. So the pioneers moving out west now, you'd have this big clunky rifle that you can't really do – or you can have it on the front of your wagon draped across your lap with, you know, 7 or 9 shots ready to roll.
Right.
You can defend yourself.
Maybe I'm not the best shot, but at least I'll get, you know –
I'll get 12
yeah. shots at it as opposed to one and then have to reload. So,
yeah, we'll get in touch on that one here. But so now the pioneers soon began referring to the rifle. The rifle picked up – when you have a good product, it picks up a reputation. You know what I mean? It's like Jackie Burns' business cards for comedy. What does it say on there?
Oh, God, fun, personable, something else.
And that's her reputation. She's a wonderful person, so – But the point
it's great
here
that I know.
So now the product comes out. The product is the Henry rifle, and it's a Winchester rifle now too. And so you know you got a good thing going here. It's now known as the gun that won the West. Now that's a good fucking tagline,
right?
All right, you want to tap into the mythos of the old West and everything like that. So now the people that first of all, you're saying the West has been won. All right, so that's
number
done.
One.
Yeah. People are going to need the guns while they're out there. But then this is also – these are the guns that you see John Wayne doing the really cool friggin' spin and move where he's reloading the lever-action rifle mm-hmm. with one hand. I mean you're seeing that the – it's almost a gun that's romantic, as ridiculous as that sounds.
And all the heroes of the day, if you will, Annie Oakley and Buffalo Bill and mm-hmm. even Teddy Roosevelt all had a Winchester rifle to deal with. So
it is my favorite part of the Annie Oakley story in that the first man – I'm sorry. She's the first person that ever beat her husband in a shooting contest.
Yes, I knew that.
And that's like how blown away the guy was because he goes, well, I can't beat you in a shooting contest. I finally met a shooter better than me. Please marry me.
What a Western love story.
That's right.
It sure is. Well, right. I am a man who dated a girl he did roast battle against too. So the first girl to insult me publicly in front of everybody, I was like, all right, I'm pretty sure we're going to be together for a while. That's how broken I am. But now Oliver Winchester, who is a very well thought of guy too, you know, for a man who owns a weapons company.
And now also very rich guy too.
Extremely rich. He also decides, like most people who have a lot of money, that you want to be, you know.
Build a $500 million house with rooms to nowhere.
Well, he's not the
not
one who
yet.
Built any
no,
of that.
No, not yet.
This is back. They're still in Connecticut. They haven't
we
moved out west
We still got a couple
yet.
Of steps yet. Coming.
Oh, so the Winchester house is literally just Mrs. Winchester's thing?
It's not even Oliver's wife's design because Oliver has – he goes on to become the lieutenant governor of Connecticut. But he dies on December 11th, 1888, which
– Oh, we just passed that.
Yep. It's which is interesting too. It feels appropriate, right? 1880.
1880. You said 88.
Yeah, I'm starting. Not for nothing too. Whoever is this asshole calling my cell
phone
while we're trying to
–
I'm going
like,
to
–
if you're a debt collector, you're not getting it. All right. If you're a comic looking for stage time, I plan on berating you on this podcast. You will be next week's American loser.
So, you need to start doing that too.
In 1880, unfortunately, Mr. Oliver Winchester passes away. Control of the company now passes to his son from Big Kahuna to Little Kahuna here with William Winchester, who had served as the treasurer of the company beforehand.
Isn't that a great name, too?
William Winchester.
William Winchester.
Well, his middle name was Little Kahuna.
William
thank you.
Oh, Little Winchester. Winchester. Maybe, yeah.
William Minnie Winnie.
So it's William Wirt Winchester was the guy's name. So his initials were literally WWW.
Right.
That's not bad at all here. www.winchester.com. Anyhow, so the company is now in William's control. But William dies of tuberculosis within a year of his father's death.
Poor thing.
And William's death leaves now the vast fortune of this company because the controlling interest in it is taken by – what's the matter? We got a factual error.
No, that's good. We're good. All right. Still good. A couple things happened to Willie before before he kicks.
Well, talk to me here, because my introductory sentence, I kill him off. So talk to me.
Oh, sorry. William marries before he dies. So, I mean, when do you want to bring in Mrs. Does, Winchester?
Well, I was going to unpack that when we talk about Sarah a little bit.
Too.
So, no, I'll tell you what.
I'm interrupting the flow here. Go.
It's okay, though. You're not a bill collector from Morristown, New Jersey. Like I said, control of the company has now fallen down to old Willie, as we're going to call him.
Mm-hmm.
He dies of tuberculosis within a year of the appointment, and now the fortune is left to his wife, Miss Sarah Lockwood Pardee Winchester. Okay. That's a rough middle name, Lockwood. That's got to be a middle name, right? Because her maiden name was Pardee.
I
think it must have been her mom's maiden name.
That's interesting.
I think
it was. Yeah, not certain, but that's a real strong possibility.
Could you imagine them trying to get a table at a restaurant growing up? Pardee, Pardee or two.
Pardee,
you
Hardy.
You are brilliant.
I'm here to party. I hear you're a party girl. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But now they go ahead and they leave the fortune down to her. Sarah's inheritance, adjusted for inflation by 2018 estimates, is over $500 million.
Yep.
That's fuck you money.
Right?
That's got to be beyond fuck you money. That's got to be you could pay someone enough money to also give them fuck you money.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's not only the money, but she's also still has nearly 50% of the stock in Winchester.
Yes. Now, she doesn't attempt to really run the company too much after that, though, because
She don't need to work.
Right. And you're still getting the royalties of at least $1,000 a day for the rest of your life. So
that's right. Like, eventually, when I sell this show to some network, I'm not going to have to work anymore.
Yeah,
right?
There you go.
We're just going to sit
up. Just remember your father when that day arrives. You know, doesn't take much to keep me happy. But
no, I assure you, it's a whatever lake house you need. Well, we'll find one for you.
Well, you're going to have something at the beach too for your mother. Don't forget your mother.
Don't forget her.
Well, she never comes on the show. That's it.
You're awful.
She listens to every episode. I love you, Mom. I'm sorry.
She's the best.
Back to it. Sarah's and William, when they worked together, they had a child, all right, and that was years earlier. The daughter's name was Annie, and Annie died of a rare disease shortly after her birth. It was very tragic, very unsettling.
She starved to death. They watched her starve.
Because she would waste away. It was
That is like the worst thing. I'm sorry.
And it was so unsettling because the name of the disease was listed on the Wikipedia page, but when I scrolled over it, the hyperlink would show you a picture of people dying of the disease.
Absolutely.
And I couldn't deal with it. And that was full grown people. We're talking about a less than 40 day year old baby, which is so just absolutely.
I'd never heard
brutal.
Of that disease, though.
What was it?
It was a disease that you're not able to process the nutrition that's coming into your body. And basically, you're just watching your child. Your newborn baby starved to death. Basically, what happens.
It's called being a vegan.
The kid was with them for 6 weeks, and then, you know, finally after 6 weeks, the baby died. Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Which is that's not a pleasant 40 days either.
No,
let's
and
be honest.
That's got to have a psychological impact on a person, regardless. I don't care how strong you are.
So it's not Sarah's fault she went a little batty.
Well, there's some questions as to about how batty she was. Now, like we said, her inheritance does have her set up for the rest of her life. But they decided not to have any additional children after that, with Annie and everything. And now her father-in-law dies, and then less than a year later, her husband dies.
Right.
Sarah is now one of the wealthiest women in the entire world, and she's got pretty much nobody to share it with. She's got her on her mother's side, she's got some family that's over on the West Coast, so she moves to the Bay Area.
Yeah, well, to put a timeline on it, Sarah's married in 1862. 4 years later, her only child is born. Annie is born in 1866. The kid virtually dies of starvation because little Annie's body just can't process nutrition. Oliver dies in 1880, and her father-in-law dies in 1880, and then William dies a year later. Her husband dies a year later. So this lady has definitely sees some tragedy in her
life. Hits just keep on coming.
Right.
But now it's brutal with that stuff, man. There's nothing good going on here. Now, because of that, because of all the tragedy surrounding her and a couple other weird kind of eccentric qualities of Miss Sarah Lockwood Winchester, the tabloids start kind of covering her the same way that we would cover celebrities nowadays. People want to know. This is the wealthiest woman in town back here in Connecticut.
She's Paris Hilton back in the day. Famous for being famous.
A recluse.
I was talking to somebody about that. It is – maybe it's just – I don't know what it is, but the word heiress is very sexy to a man. I don't know why we – I mean, I'm sure –
to anybody.
I was going to say to a woman because if you could
– I can get behind that.
Make that your title? I mean
– The heiress of New Jersey.
There you go. If you're an heiress, you got money. If you're a widow, your husband died. You know, that's but you don't – doesn't necessarily mean you had money.
Well, because I remember where I was. I remember breathing heavy the first time that VA it was E. E did like a true Hollywood story about the Hilton sisters. And that's the first time I ever heard the word heiress. And you're just staring at Nikki and Paris Hilton. You're just like, oh.
They were gorgeous, too.
Still are, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
And if they're listening, I want them to. so they go ahead and the tabloids are covering her her story a little bit here. And shortly after her husband's death, one of the tabloids prints a story. And this is where that spooky shit's coming in, Cahoons. A tabloid prints a story claiming that a Boston medium, okay, that is a person who's able to channel spirits, if you will, is channeling her dead husband. All right? So Sarah's husband is now speaking to her from beyond the grave via this medium from Boston, which, by the way, can we admit how funny it would be if the dead person had a Boston accent all the time
100%.
Now? 100%. Oh, my God.
Don't do voices, Kevin.
No, I can't. Can't do voices.
Don't be Tom Kenny. Just chill. Don't be the next Mel LeBlanc.
Now they channel her dead husband, and he's telling her from beyond the grave, supposedly, that she needs to move out west. Okay, needs to move out west and start construction on a house that, in order to have the spirits that are haunting him and haunting her from the victims of the Winchester rifles. Okay, of which the fortune is. Literally all they have. She needs to build a house, and then it needs to never stop being constructed. That as long as there's construction going on, the ghosts aren't going to come find her. That's the story they're printing in the newspaper here. Now, some people support the idea that Sarah did feel haunted by the spirits and that possibly there was some bad karma coming off the fortune with that. But others assert to her that it was just a love of architecture and a need for a change of scenery coming from all the depression shit she was dealing with up in Connecticut. And she did have family out in the Bay Area like we talked about. So it's not like she just decided to move to some town she never heard of and build a mansion before.
She was guided there apparently.
Mm-hmm. Well, she did that. And she did love architecture. I mean, she was well studied from a lot of the stuff overseas and everything. Now we're going to unpack – because LP, you found some really cool shit here on old Sarah.
Yeah, she was a very interesting, well-educated, highly intelligent woman. There's no doubt. When her husband dies in 1881, she goes off for 3 years, and there's really not any documentation or evidence as to where exactly she went in Europe. Right. But she was off to Europe for 3 years before she did finally come back to decide to go to California and San Jose. excuse me, California.
Now, while she's over seas, if you will, she's kind of getting exposed to some interesting, you know, architecture designs over there. I mean, have you ever been to Europe, Jack?
Sure have.
Where'd you go?
Italy.
They got
England. Well, England's, yeah.
A little different than Ridgewood, New Jersey, right?
A little bit different, yeah.
Paramus, New Jersey.
Yeah.
I gave the wrong town so that the Turkish men would never find
me. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
All right, just – I zeroed. Operations. I'm zeroing in on you, Jack. Sorry.
I'm so happy you know where I live, though.
But that being said, when you're over there, that is one thing that people are always taken in by is the architecture. You hear people talk. They notice shit that they've never noticed before. So now – old Sarah's overseas. She's seeing some cool shit, isn't she?
Absolutely.
And a lot of that stuff would come into design in different portions of the Winchester Mystery House, as it would become to known.
The Mystery House. I mean, with all these possibilities traveling around Europe, she's definitely taken some notes of some of the more famous architecture, not just Italy, but France and England.
She was a smart lady is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely
what
smart.
What was her early background? I know you dug up some stuff
back
on
that. Back in the day, yeah. She, again, coming from early on, she was considered a prodigy that by the time she was 12, she was already fluent in Latin, French, Spanish, and Italian. So, I mean, she's multilingual. So now, as an adult, you're going over.
What age?
12.
Damn.
Yeah.
At 12, I was barely good at English.
Still working on it.
I was going to say, at 22, you're not much sharper either, bud.
Big Kahuna thinks he's fine.
and
I got you.
Well done. That was awesome.
I learned me some English. I got me that book learning.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
One
of the best Simpsons quotes. I'm sorry. Get back into it.
She was, multilinguistic. Also, an extreme knowledge of the classics like Homer and Shakespeare. A remarkable talent as a musician. And she was the hot ticket of New Haven, Connecticut.
She had them smarts.
Yeah, she
I think she was a hottie with a body too.
Nice. So she was the hot ticket. That she was a good looking woman. She became known as the belle of New Haven. So she's the belle of the ball. She's the number one hottie of New Haven, Connecticut. There's several things about.
I'd swipe right.
Huh?
Kahuna brought her photo up, and he's saying that he would swipe right if he found her on a dating app.
New Haven is also kind of a unique thing to her upbringing, too, because within New Haven, Connecticut, you have Yale University, originally known as Yale College. And there was a lot of people from her family who went to Yale. And as a matter of fact, she went to the I don't know how to really put this, but I guess it was more like the female version of Yale University, that she was well-schooled, and many of the professors from Yale were also involved with her schooling as well.
Wait, was she went to this private school, or was it like she actually just was, like, schooled at home?
No, she actually went to that school.
Okay. Very rare for the time.
The young ladies... Sure. It was the Young Ladies Collegiate Institute.
Okay.
But it was really kind of an offshoot of Yale University. And it was also a very strong progressive feelings or social kind of activity within that, and a very strong Freemasonic Rosicrucian.
Rosicrucians. Thank you.
Right. Rosicrucians of the Freemasonic Order. Now, the Masons or the Masonic Order is also another secret organization, if you will, that any outsider really doesn't have all the ins and outs of the Freemasons, but many members of the Pardee family were Freemasons.
Ain't no party like a Freemason party.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
So she's got some weird, some definitely interesting things there. That there's a little bit of that Illuminati New World Order thing going on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Jack, you had notes as well too, so you have to jump in whenever you think of something.
No. You guys are beautiful. I'm gonna chime in whenever I see fit. But you guys are very thorough.
Jump in.
Jackie's the first guest on this show to ever show up with her own notes.
I don't even do notes.
I went to private school, Kahuna.
That's right.
Okay.
She would get her knuckles smacked if she didn't do notes.
Now you're throwing your fancy education at the big
there
Kahuna.
You go.
That's not fair.
That's right.
Big Kahuna doesn't throw his educationalisms at you.
You just stay pretty over there, okay? Don't you worry about a thing.
But Sarah's there's a lot to her. This is not a housewife goes crazy. Incident.
Yeah, a brilliant woman, there's no doubt. Two of Sarah's classmates are sisters, Sousa and Rebecca Bacon, and their father, the Bacon sisters' father, is Dr. Bacon.
if there's ever a name,
right?
I would not mind having.
Yeah, Bacon would.
No, Dr. Bacon.
Dr. Bacon, the king.
You better be a professional.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Bacon, who again is part of this whole Yale and the whole school of thought, if you will, in that particular area at the time. His sister comes up with this whole idea that Shakespeare was not really the guy who wrote all the famous Shakespearean plays. Jackie, you got something on that
one? Well, no. Wait, what? Yeah, they were suggesting that the other Bacon, Francis Bacon, who came up with the scientific method.
Right, right.
Truly part of it. At least part of Shakespeare's works.
Yeah. And he was truly a brilliant guy. So then Shakespeare
just wrote Romeo and Juliet, but everything else was just another
tune. I mean, there's always been speculation, I think, about Shakespeare because he wrote a volume of works. So.
And this Delilah Bacon, Dr. Bacon's sister, there's no family connection between Francis Bacon, but...
What, Madam Turkey Ham?
There you go. It's all
Lord Turducken.
Turducken. This is where this whole idea that Francis Bacon was truly the author of all the famous Shakespearean plays. So anyhow, you know, being there, we're all classmates, they're all friends, they all grew up together, they all went to the same church together, and the Pardees and the Winchesters were both, you know, hometown families, New Haven families. As I said, they all went to the same church together. So there was a lot of strong interconnects here.
It's like if a Kennedy married into the royal family. You know what I mean?
That would be beautiful.
A lot of big swinging dicks in the room.
That's it. That's it. You know, and the Bacons they had some bucks too. So, I mean, they were influential people within the town of New Haven.
There's a bring home the bacon joke I could make, but I just think we're...
Do it.
Wow, low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, that is low-hanging fruit. And that podcast is until later tonight.
Okay,
there you go.
Shade
thrown.
None of them listen. I wish they would.
Maybe they will because I'm on. No, just playing.
Also true. That's the draw.
Be like, what episode did he diss us on? So,
not for nothing here, to get back to old Sarah, because I know we're pleasantly scatterbrained today. That's my own fault. So Sarah now, she's moving out to California, LP. But is there anything else from her background that's going to explain some of the weird shit she does when she moves out there?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are going to be found out later with the architecture of the house that, you know, people look at and say, oh, that's just wacky shit. But there's a lot of... ideas or different concepts that you can point to. Coming from a very strong Freemason upbringing within New Haven and within her own family and the Winchester family as well, this whole Bacon, Francis Bacon kind of a idea that, you know, he went into the whole numerology of letters and that type of thing. And mathematics was a strong suit of Sarah. So, I mean, all of this stuff, you know, with her direct exposure to this whole Baconian doctrine, if you will, and all things Francis Bacon, that there's a lot of stuff that I think is going to have a direct influence on what she designs out in California.
Well, now that's cool because, like we said, in 1884, she finally heads out to California. Whether or not it was influenced by her dead husband speaking to her from beyond the grave, we'll never really know. Well, because you got to print the legend. The legend's what's going to sell the papers here.
100%.
But she purchases an unfinished farmhouse in San Jose, California, in order to build her mansion. Carpenters worked day and night round the clock to construct what would become a 7-story mansion. Sarah served as her own architect. LP, when you were working as a contractor, there were certain times when you would go in to put a bid in for a project and you'd get to feel the customer out a little bit.
Right.
How many times did you walk out of there and say, I'm not working for this asshole?
Well, I'm sorry that I started, but I can remember one particular job too where the guy that was in charge of the job wasn't the homeowner. He was hired by the homeowner, so he was kind of like the overseer. And he was an artist.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and that became very difficult because we were told to, you know, put the wall up, an outside wall, put the wall up. It's going to be a blank wall, no windows on it. Wall is up, then we literally took big sheets of cardboard and cut it out to the shape of the window that this guy thought might go there. And we'd tack it onto the side of the house so that he could step back and better visualize what that would look like if it had a window on it. Okay, yeah, that, we like that. All right, so now reconfigure the wall that you just put up yesterday.
On the next episode of American Losers, we talk about this guy.
Yeah. So yeah, it was wacky, and you know, after, it's fine because you're working, you know, and this was a time of materials job, but after a while, you're like, holy crap, you know, what I'm putting in today is probably going to be torn out tomorrow because this this wackadoodle is going to decide that we wanted to do something different. So,
right.
Well, good old Sarah, like we said, served as her own architect. A couple questions there. But if she's going to work you around the clock as a carpenter and you're going to have shift work going on, and she says, oh, and by the way, the project's never going to end, I'm working that job every day.
Right.
I can't wait
right.
to come
and
in.
And she paid better. Right, I think she at least paid double what the going rate was.
I'd hope with the money she was worth. I mean,
and yeah. she boarded them too. They could live in on at some point on the grounds.
She there took very good care of the people that she had working for her.
Yeah, yep. There was a weird rumor that they tried to start that they worked day and night forever, but she would let them off for like months at a time for the holidays or for a winter. Do they have winter in San Jose? We have listeners in San Jose. Let me know. Message me, guys. So this is a weird part where what I'm going to do is I'm going to present what I know to be true here. And then I know you've got some of the ghost story aspect of it. And I know Jackie Burns got some info here for us too. But the house is interesting because due to the earthquake of 1906, the building is now only 4 stories tall. But thanks to what is known as a floating foundation that the house was built on, the mansion stayed largely intact. Lawrence Patrick, what is a floating foundation?
A floating foundation is a building technique where you don't have to dig down below what we call the frost line. In other words, like in this part of the country, you have to put a foundation in or a footing in 3 feet below grade. So in other words, you have to dig down 3 feet, pour concrete, and then build on top of that so that in the dead of winter when you have a frost heave, when the ground is up and down because of the moisture in the ground, that the whole building doesn't crack apart. A floating foundation, you're building into that. You're building on grade and accounting for the building movement. Now, in California, you know, there's probably
the ground
not a
move out there.
In San Jose, California, there's not a real deep frost level, so it's a different way of doing it. To be a real floating foundation, you're putting the foundation in, and then you're accounting for a building movement. You know, she's really ahead of her time back then. With you're almost trying to build with keeping in mind that you might be struck by an earthquake at any time. So the seismic conditions are also directly related to the depth of your foundation and all that type of thing.
So that winds up saving the house in a lot of ways, but it's also, let's not forget the fact that this lady is a little loony in terms of some of the unconventional designs in the house.
Yeah, well, she had no real architectural training, so a lot of this was she was learning by doing, and she had the bucks to you know, to train herself kind of a thing.
Well, so it's like that game Minecraft or whatever. You're building into nothing, you know what I mean? So you guys are like, oh, we're running out of space over there. Better, all right, no more
better
staircase.
Just start building over
right.
there.
Yeah, right. She had a clean slate. She had a clean easel to whatever her vision was. And if the vision changes, hey, all right, we're going
to
change it.
And there's no boss to yell at you either, because she is the boss. The house. This is one of her funny quirks. I thought that was interesting. Was the house was made mostly of redwood by Miss Winchester's choice. She decided that she liked a California redwood out there in the house. Loved the wood, liked everything about it, except hated its appearance.
And that had is it, such a girl thing.
Had it stained in order to make it look different.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best.
Did that come in different colors?
We love you just the way you are, if we could change you.
And like we said, staircases that go nowhere, doors that open up to nothing. Kahuna has a couple pictures up right now where there's a door that opens above the kitchen that you can look down into the sink. I mean, it's... I think what it is that in a haunted house...
The Looney Tunes would love this house.
Exactly. Yeah, it looks like one of those where you just do the hallway running back and forth gag. But what I think would with a haunted house for me is when you're in an old house, it's creepy to begin with because there's a history to the house. And the last thing you want to do is look over your shoulder and realize you've been watched. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And they have enough of these friggin' windows in this house... And there's unconventional windows, too, like some of these ones that we're looking at here. It's creepy shit. Imagine you're walking down a hallway and now there's a window and somebody can be looking down. And, oh, and also the other fact is that, you know, it's no secret, guys, all right? Old KP likes to enjoy a couple of Steve Weisers every now and then, okay? Now imagine coming home drunk to your own house and going up a staircase that doesn't go anywhere or opening a door that opens into the ceiling right. and falling.
Right.
I mean, it is a insurance nightmare, this house.
Look at this. This is a literal door that goes to nowhere.
That's right. That first step's a big one, but
this is the part.
I know it's even exterior too, which makes no sense.
This is the part where we're going to start talking about what they thought of the ghost thing. Jay Byrne, what do you know about what the weird spiritual connections with the house? Do you know anything about that?
Well, they said it was definitely haunted for sure.
The paranormal investigators have all confirmed. Multiple different ones have all confirmed that the house is haunted. So they do believe in that. It's. But supposedly,
what a playground for them, though. Seriously,
That's what some people in the legend would try to chalk it up to: is that she was designing the house in order to appease the spirits of the people who were killed by the Winchester rifle. So she wanted to be able to welcome the spirits in, probably with a door that opens up to nothing that only the spirits can come through. Okay, that might be a thing there.
Didn't she conduct seances too for them from like 12 to 2, I think I read?
There was rumors of, LP, you found an article that says that most of what we hope is true, because it's more interesting.
With the ghosty aspect? Yeah.
Yeah, well, the nightly seances was a thing. I mean, because we're talking, this is, like I said here, we're splitting apart the rumors and the myth versus the actual person.
Sure.
So she definitely, there's a lot of hyperbole on some of the weird, she was a weird lady, but we turned the volume up to 11, all right?
Yeah.
Just to make sure to, you know, to send this thing home. But
But don't you have the perfect scenario here? You have this rich widow that's got more money than God. Who decides to go out to California to build this house.
After tragedy befalls her.
Right. Yeah, after her husband dies, her father-in-law dies, and her only infant child dies in infancy. And then goes who knows where for 3 years, comes back from Europe, and then starts building this house with, you know, there are no
doors to nowhere.
Also, doors to nowhere, labyrinths, and all, you know, skylights that are in the floor.
Too,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, I just want to point out, I chuckled at a point that I realized was a really shitty point to chuckle at. You mentioned dead baby, and then I chuckled because I pulled up a picture of this door to nowhere. So, right. No, I wasn't laughing at a dead baby joke for the future listeners.
It was curious timing, but whatever.
Right.
I just want to point that out for the future.
Well, there's rumors that the house did contain spirits. There was, as Jackie was saying, the nightly seances.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie, how many bathrooms in your house?
One.
Okay. I believe that this is one thing I heard. I don't quite understand it. There was one working bathroom in the house.
Is that true?
For Miss Wynn. There's multiple bathrooms, but only one of them was supposedly working.
That is absolutely ridiculous. I'm so pissed for her.
And supposedly it was done as decoy rooms to confuse the spirits. And there was other rumors, too, that she slept in a different one
bedroom
of her different 40 bedrooms
I read that too.
Any given night.
Let me tell you, this place, for the people who, for some reason, if you don't want to look this up, if you don't have a computer, this place is like
it's actual bananas.
Haunted mansion. Like, this is
right. If you had to build a movie set for a haunted mansion, this is it.
And this is the newly discovered room.
Inspired by it, I read in one of the articles.
Really?
Really?
As an archetype, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense now, actually.
I could kill Eddie Murphy's career in here.
Oh, man.
But, the other one, because the Walt Disney thing I didn't know about, that's pretty goddamn interesting.
Right?
But I do know that Mythbusters.
It looks ominous.
Now, on Mythbusters, the girl, I believe Carrie is her name on Mythbusters.
Did they go into this?
Yeah.
When they went into this, they went in and they, in one of the ballrooms, they set up a screening for one of the scariest movies of all time. And they made them all watch it, and they tested their sweat for some sort of like weird experiment or something.
That's weird.
But Carrie, who was the redhead on that show, not to be confused with our redhead on this show, Jackie Byrne, but she was saying that she had gone to the house as a brownie scout when she was in the Girl Scouts.
Oh, cool.
And that the house terrified her while she was there, and it freaked her out. And she had nightmares about the house. So she was not looking forward to going back over it.
Carrie?
The place is creepy. There's definitely a creepy. Yeah. Now, also, Kahuna's going through these fucking pictures. Some shithead got married in this house.
No.
Where?
Where was it? Go. I just saw a bride and, yeah, right there.
You shithead.
What a psycho.
Perfect.
So I don't want to.
You know what it is about this place that bugs me, though? It's how, like, with me, I like things to kind of look a certain way, be kind of even. Like, this house is literally different from every view that you look at it.
Right.
Like, you would think you're looking at a different
building.
There is
no symmetry here.
Like, there's no symmetry. It's just not pleasant.
Your plan's going to change.
Right.
Yeah, plans are going to change over the course of 30-something years.
For sure. But she definitely have to switch to granite countertops at some point, you know.
Yeah, but you got to understand, too, that a lot of this ghosty stuff came about after she died.
Was drummed up for tourism.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the ghost theories.
Right, yeah, well, the ghost theories and the ghost tours and everything else. These are all money-making. I don't want to call them schemes, but you know, they're going to promote the whole ghosty, crazy widow lady, that crazy heiress
thing. It's also not a hard sell, though, because she did have those interests in things that could be confused for the occult.
Right.
Right.
The number 13 is all over the house, constant references to the number 13. When Sarah dies, her will is in 13 parts that she signed 13 times.
Yeah. Right.
Each part of there's 13 separate parts to the will, and each part is signed 13 times.
Yep. Now, other weird shit, too, is that the number 13 is all over a piece of stained glass window that was done in a custom spiderweb-like design for Sarah.
I didn't see that.
So she had some other weird stuff, too, here. The stained glass spiderweb designs we were talking about, bells that would ring to announce the arrival and departure of otherworldly visitors. Again, we were talking about the nightly seances.
Because she didn't have real people come over. Because back in the day, you couldn't have visitors if your house was under construction. So she never had company.
Shit.
Those ballrooms never got used.
Wow.
How messed up is that?
Oh, boy.
She could have had so many ragers.
She had... Party house.
Right? You know, yeah, party. There you go.
You know,
when you said that, a thought popped into my head like, ooh, that'd make a great party place now. And then I was like, no, do not do that to poor drunk people, because you wander off into that house, you'll never be found again.
Right.
That's the start of every
horror
movie, too.
It's a labyrinth of rooms. It's a maze of rooms within this same house.
Okay, if you think a decoy room that was designed to work on a spirit from another world and dimension, if it's going to work on that spirit, it's going to work just as well on some drunk douchebag.
Seriously.
Really? Right. Good money for this ghost tour.
She designed it as a ghost playground. I think that's literally the best way to put it.
Well, it was taken over and turned into a fun house of sorts. But this is all after she passed. Now, Sarah died in her sleep 38 years after living in what was being now called the Winchester Mystery House. So construction has gone on for nearly 40 years at this point. Rumors started to continue to circulate that
her
death was very quiet, by the way. Her death was very quiet. It was just like a local woman, passes away or whatever. But then the rumors started to get, once you get a good story, man, it's something to sink your teeth into. The house contained spirits. She conducted the seances. The cursed fortune of the Winchesters, blah, blah, ghosts that still live in their house to this day. It all started to come out more and more and become more popular than the actual truth. Now, the idea of the ghost story aspect started to gain traction, and tours started to begin. Within 5 months of her dying, the first walking tours of the house to see Sarah Winchester's batshit crazy, demon-possessed house. Now, the Amityville house from the Amityville Horror has been knocked down. They at least redid the windows on it or something like that. I think – I'm not even sure if it's still standing.
It's still standing. They redid the exterior. So it doesn't have those like eye things.
The eye.
Still.
See, that would be the first move I'd make here. But now Winchester – it's somehow or other the house is still under their control. But they have certainly started to embrace the idea of Sarah's ghostly past, if you will.
Yeah, because it's making money.
It's making money.
To spin to the other side of here, I found it pretty interesting, too, that when she came back from Europe and took up residence in San Jose and starts to build this house, a lot of people, why did she pick that particular part of
the
country?
She was a diehard Sharks fan.
Well, there's Pardee relatives living in the area. There's a Enoch Pardee, who was a highly respected physician and politician who was living in Oakland, California. So she's got family. She's got family out there. And later, his son, George Pardee, follows in his father's footsteps and rises to the office of governor of California.
Mm.
So, there's some pretty well-respected Pardees in California. And, she's moved herself to be with family. And then it's interesting. I thought this was pretty flippy. This particular author of this article says, it's interesting that Wikipedia makes particular note of Enoch Pardee having been a prominent oculist. Occultist. I did it again.
I really thought you were messed with. He read that to me last week. He goes, an oculist. And I was like, an eye doctor? No. Yeah, that's cool. Right?
Occultist. I'm sorry.
I thought you were messing with me.
I didn't know what you, I was like, oculist? What do you mean? That's hilarious.
No, occultist. My bad. Oh, wow.
My edumacation.
Most likely. No. Yeah, there you go. Got to be able to read them words. Most likely the occult reference has to do with the fact that both Enoch and his son George were members of the highly secretive and mysterious California-based Bohemian Club, which was an offshoot of Yale's, back to Connecticut, Yale's Skull and Bones Society. And there's some big-time heavy hitters who were members of the Yale.
Do you know anything about Skull and Bones, Jackie Byrne?
I don't.
I've never heard of him
either.
In 2004, two members of the secret society known as Skull and Bones at Yale ran against each other for president of the United States in John Kerry, Secretary of State John Kerry, and President George W. Bush were both members of said organization. George Herbert Walker Bush was a member of this organization.
Papa Bush.
Who recently passed
R.I.P.
away. In addition, who else was it? William F. Buckley was a member of the club, kind of one of the central figures in intelligence and conservative thought. And additionally, all these powerhouse players, I mean, heads of companies, heads of CEOs of major corporations, and Paul Giamatti.
Wait, but what the heck
is
it? Yeah, this makes no sense.
It's a secret society.
Yeah, that, nobody really knows because when asked, do you know anything about it? Yeah, it's a secret.
Seriously?
Yeah, absolutely.
In George W. Bush's own biography, he mentions, in Yale, I joined a club called Skull and Bones. That's all I'm allowed to say about it. And they pretty much, if you want to go into the idea of the New World Order and the Illuminati and all that other shit, it all stems from right in there. You had the creation of the CIA, all sorts of cool shit.
Interesting. But, whoa.
I just think it's so hilarious, though, that all these people who are central figures in running the country, possibly running the world, and also Paul Giamatti.
Right.
He was also in it.
Yep, Paul Giamatti was a member of that
member.
Club. So all this spooky shit.
No.
You have to in order to go into that club.
Oh, I didn't know he had to. Good for him.
But back
also,
to
also, Kev, interesting is the fact that President Theodore Roosevelt, who was also a member of that same Bohemian club.
No way.
Well, T.R. was a Yale grad, so he was a member of that club.
And what do we know about T.R., Dad?
Well, he came to California in 1903 and asked Governor Pardee, all right, one of Sarah's relatives, to run as his vice presidential candidate in the 1904 national election. The offer was turned down by Governor Pardee, but during that same trip, Roosevelt attempted to visit Sarah Pardee, Winchester. And again, Roosevelt's offer was turned down. So, I mean, you're bringing into the thing, Jackie, that you know, she didn't really accept any visitors or have any parties and stuff. But you got to understand if Teddy Roosevelt
knocks on your door,
right?
You got to let him in.
Well, you would think, but you got to also understand that if TR is running for president, he's certainly going to pay a visit to the richest woman. In America,
he's
if not the
stupid.
World. So I mean,
who's also supposed to be pretty hot?
Who also?
You want to know how hot she was?
So he went
too?
To that batshit crazy mansion.
You always have to.
He tried to go there. He tried to go there, but all I was able to find is that his offer to visit was turned down. So you know whether he literally knocked on the door.
He was probably happy about it.
Right.
He probably heard about this mansion.
He can tell Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, to go
found
scratch.
It.
He probably saw a picture of this mansion and was like, "No, I'm glad."
If you want to know how attractive she was, too, by the way, this would give you an indicator for how attractive of a woman she probably was. The recent movie titled Winchester.
Which I didn't see. Did you see it?
I did not see it.
I plan
on watching it. Well, I didn't want to watch that and bring the falsehoods of that narrative into the show. So now that I know the real thing, now I can enjoy the entertainment side of it. But starring Helen Mirren, who might be, I mean, I can't think of a woman who's more attractive in her 70s than Helen Mirren. But old school Helen Mirren, too.
Smoke show.
Total smoke show, babe. She plays Sarah Winchester. And that's only continued to fuel the myths about the house and the woman who, like I said, when she died, within 5 months, her house was turned into a tourist trap where they started bringing people through for tours. You can now actually go on this one. Kahuna, I want you to keep it under control here, all right, bud? You're going to freak when you hear this one. They now do nighttime tours of the Winchester Mystery House, and you are only allowed to lead yourself through with a candelabra with candlelight on
it. No, is that true?
Yep.
I read about the midnight tours, but I didn't know that that's how you do it.
Yep, so they...
Absolutely not.
Absolutely.
Absolutely not.
It's not the. Oh, it's not me that had to calm down there, all right?
No, sorry.
Jay Byrne was all over
no
it.
No way.
Thank you for taking over for that
I'm
one.
I'm here for you.
Well, like you said, many parts of the Winchester House are more fiction than fact, but several paranormal teams have – so they blew the legend out of proportion because it sells, right? It's a tourist attraction, bringing people in for the nighttime tours. The website, the tours, the virtual tours you can go on YouTube of the house. It's cool shit. I want to see this house someday, okay?
I think we have to go.
Yeah,
I think we have to go.
It's a lot of field trips. Road trip. I ever get a budget behind this?
Road trip.
Yeah, exactly. Seriously, though.
But that being said, when the paranormal teams do investigate it, there are weird things that are unexplainable that can go on there. There are some the ghosts of one of the workers in one of the basements that they can continually hear.
With the wheelbarrow, right?
Yes, the wheelbarrow guy who's seen regularly. There's other weird stuff, too, that's going on. Ring of bells, sounds that can't be explained. And then, again, when you have the number 13 and all these weird eccentricities of Sarah Winchester, you really can't – you can say that it got blown out of proportion, but it's not like this was an ordinary lady who, all of a sudden we started spinning wild tales about.
Right.
So now that being said, anybody else got anything before we wrap it up on this one? Or
the Munsters would love this house.
It was just with the house, with the architecture and everything else and all the weird numbers, 47 chimneys and all this kind of stuff, or 47 fireplaces. Sarah was also into this whole encryption codes with that whole Winchester Francis Bacon connection from her upbringing back in New Haven, that there's all kinds of tie-ins where she would take her name and encrypt it to a numerical value, her dead husband's name, her dead daughter's name, and there's a repetition there that it's happening over and over and over again, and that is infused into the whole design architecture of this house in many, many different aspects, and the whole Freemasonic imagery, I mean, these staircases that lead to nowhere.
This is a paint by numbers for creeping people out.
Right.
It's all there.
That whole thing, well, that's part of the imagery or symbolism
was
within
goth.
Queen Goth. But the staircase that leads to nowhere has Freemason symbolism, and there's influences that perhaps she took from her 3-year trip to Europe that she infused into that house with doors that go nowhere and staircases that lead to nowhere. Some people attribute some of these labyrinths as kind of almost an M.C. Escher, the artist that was great with illusions, kind of a thing too. That whether she was trying to put into 3D what M.C. Escher did on canvas, but who the heck knows? I don't know. It's just the whole numerical ciphers and stuff, though, really starts to spin this thing off into a whole different area too. Is it? Far beyond my math, my math capability.
Well, if anybody who – we do have listeners in San Jose, so if anybody knows a little more detail on that that's listening to this out in that area, go ahead and reach out to me. It's at KP Burke Sucks on Twitter and Instagram, KP Burke over on Facebook. Jay Byrne, this episode's going to come out this coming Tuesday, okay? So if you want to plug anything, if you want to look at your calendar real quick for that. But if you like the show, do me a favor and like, subscribe, share, confront your racist uncle, tell him to start listening. I want to thank Mike and Ming for letting us come back here to a shared studio, shared universe studio. We did two today, man. All right, so it's got a little bit crazy, but we wanted to make sure we had these ready to roll for the holidays, so everybody's schedule doesn't get all screwed up. Kahuna, thanks for being behind the ones and twos, buddy. I appreciate
always,
you,
man.
Dad. I love you. Thanks for getting me into history.
Tuesday is lose day, so keep. keep on listening for Tuesday Lose Day releases.
And when this episode comes out, it will be on Tuesday the 18th, all right? So do me a favor if you guys listen to this after Christmas. I hope you had a good one here or whatever. But on the 20th, the 21st, and the 22nd of December, leading up to my Christmas, very excited here. I'm going to be opening up for one of the best comics working today, Big Jay Oakerson, down at Uncle Vinny's Comedy Club in Point Pleasant. Do me a favor. Come on by. That shit's going to be – you can say that you're there to support me.
That's going
to
be really good. I'm going to speak for him.
Yeah, and just see one of the masters of comedy working up there. And he's really he's phenomenal. I'm very excited about this. I'm 90% convinced I'm going to get kicked off the show the day of, but we'll find out.
No, never.
That being said, Jay Byrne, where can they find you?
Can I be honest with you? December gets late for me towards the end, so I would just say go to JackieByrne.com. That's where I'll be updating. And I'm at Jackie Byrne on Facebook and Twitter.
Excellent. Okay. And seriously, check out a live show at Jackie. She's one of my favorite comics. Very funny person here. Lawrence Patrick, where can they find you? You're working on – you're going to be at Home Depot sometime soon?
I'm hiding.
He's going to be at Uncle Vinny's next week. That's keeping what he's trying to say.
Keeping a low profile.
I sure hope. But this one was interesting here. I hope you guys enjoyed it too. That was Sarah Winchester, American Loser. Thank you guys. Good night.
An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born.